The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937, by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First article from news.cornell.edu. Eye on a chip reveals trigger for steroid-induced glaucoma. From the Cornell Chronicle, August 27, 2025. The eye, like most organs, has an intricate plumbing system. Pressure builds when drainage is impaired, and this condition, glaucoma, can cause irreversible vision loss. Article by David Nutt, NUTT, for the Cornell Chronicle. Certain popular anti-inflammatory eye medications that contain steroids can, in some cases, compound the problem, although scientists have been at a loss to understand why. Now, Cornell researchers have identified the signaling mechanism that triggers steroid-induced glaucoma by creating a 3D eye-on-a-chip platform that mimics the flow of ocular fluids. The findings were published August 27th in Nature Cardiovascular Research. The lead author is Renhao Liu, Ph.D., 2024. Her name is spelled R-E-N-H-A-O-L-U. Steroid-induced glaucoma is a major clinical challenge. There's no targeted therapy. We just say, you're unlucky, said senior author Isaac Lee, assistant professor of biomedical engineering at Cornell Engineering. There is a clear unmet need to better understand and prevent this major side effect of the steroid in clinics. Glaucoma is typically studied in animal models and simple 2D cell structures, but those approaches often fail to capture the anatomical complexity and responsiveness of the human eye. The solution from Lee's lab, which studies lymphatic systems in different types of organs, has been to create 3D in vitro models that can reproduce the system's layered structures while isolating biological and biophysical factors, all in a highly reproducible and controlled manner. Lee previously co-designed such a device that revealed a protein that jams up the necessary drainage in human skin lymphatic vessels, causing the painful swelling known as lymphedema. The eye's lymphatic vessels are responsible for draining aqueous humor, a clear water-like fluid that provides oxygen and nutrients, but when not removed, can cause intraocular pressure, IOP, to build, damaging neurons in the retina that are critical for transmitting light signals to the brain. Lee's team realized the lymphatics in the eye, known as Schlemm's canal, that's SC cells, spelled S-C-H-L-E-M-M, are quite different from those in the skin, lungs, and other organs. These are surrounded by another cell type, trabecular meshwork, T-R-A-B-E-C-U-L-A-R. Only with both cell layers working in conjunction can the lymphatic system flush the overproduced aqueous humor back into the bloodstream. The team built a 3D in vitro device known as a microphysiological system, MPS, with a double layer of TM and SC cells, with a curvature that mimicked the conduit structure of the lymphatic vessels in the eye. The researchers treated the eye on a chip with the anti-inflammatory steroid dexamethasone, which significantly impaired the drainage. This enabled researchers to identify the culprit, a key receptor in TM cells, ALK5, responded to the steroid by downregulating a protein, vascular endothelial growth factor C, VEGFC, which normally loosens the endothelial junctions in SC cells, enabling fluid to pass through the endothelial wall. But that function was disrupted by ALK5/VEGFC signaling. This communication causes the Schlemm's canal junction abnormality, Lee said. The junctions become really thickened or tightened under the steroid, and that junction change increased the resistance of the outflow, causing this glaucoma. The researchers confirmed the role of the mechanism in a mouse model. The finding opens up two paths to treating glaucoma, blocking ALK5 function, or providing additional VEGFC to the eye along with the steroid treatment. We are now aiming to study other targets. There are some genes that people know are important for glaucoma, not just steroid-induced, and we could knock them out in these two cell types, Lee said. It's complicated and difficult to target one cell type in conventional animal models, but in this system we could do any genetic modification of these two cell types separately, and then combine them in the device to get a better understanding of these different mechanisms and different types of glaucoma. Co-authors include postdoctoral researcher Anna Kalarzyk, Ph.D. 25, and W. Daniel Stamer, S-T-A-M-E-R, professor of ophthalmology at Duke University. The researchers made use of the Cornell Nanoscale Science and Technology Facility. The research was supported by the National Institutes of Health and the Bright Focus Foundation. Next, from BrailleInstitute.org, a boss embosser. Posted July 29, 2025, Braille Institute has many relationships with corporations that are creating products to help people with low vision or blindness gain greater independence. With a highly trained staff that has years of experience helping people use the latest assistive technology, we're a logical place to offer advice to companies or to collaborate with them. So it was not particularly unusual that in early 2025 we heard from two inventors who wanted to demonstrate for us a device that they promised would make life better for people with visual impairments. What was unusual is that in order to get to our offices, they needed help because they weren't old enough to drive. In July 2024, Andrew Hsu, spelled X-U, and Ethan Hu, spelled H-U, two middle school students from San Diego with a love of robotics, were searching for a science project to collaborate on when the proverbial light bulb went off. They were randomly watching YouTube videos and heard former prototype developer Zach Friedman mention that embossing machines that create Braille books cost thousands of dollars. With their knowledge of coding, robotics, and 3D printing, they figured they could build a low-cost portable version and immediately set to work. Over the course of a few months, they built a few prototypes, constructing everything but the metal parts with a 3D printer. Using an open-source microprocessor, they wrote a program that could convert words typed on a laptop into Braille printed on a page. To produce those Braille dots, a digital signal travels from the laptop through wires connected to circuit boards, connected to more wires that lead to a plotting device. A motor then causes an ordinary pencil with a sewing needle inserted and epoxied at one end to punch out letters in Braille on a piece of paper. Since the Braille dots appear on the reverse side of the paper, Andrew and Ethan had to program the machine to write backwards. So when the paper was flipped over, words would appear in the correct order, all seemingly routine for the boys. The entire apparatus, they said, cost about $200 in materials. In February, they brought their machine to Braille Institute for feedback. Three staff members, including two who are visually impaired, checked out the machine and verified that they could read the Braille. We were also able to see an actual embosser, says Andrew. It was really big. Andrew and Ethan next entered the machine into the Greater San Diego Science and Engineering Fair in March, winning first place in the engineering, electrical, mechanical, and robotics category, and the Grand Award for Physical Science in the middle school division. Next up was the California Science and Engineering Fair in April, where they won second place in the electronics and electromagnets category, plus the Broadcom Coding with Commitment Award. Unlike many entrepreneurs who are eager to monetize their breakthroughs, Andrew and Ethan have decided to give away the plans for making their portable Braille embosser. "We want this to be accessible for anyone for cheap," says Andrew, as they believe strongly in an open-source culture, especially when the goal is to help people. Andrew and Ethan also surprised Braille Institute when they donated $200 from their science fair winnings to the organization. In July, they visited the San Diego Center to present a check and to speak about their machine. "Braille Institute helped us, so we wanted to help them," says Ethan. "The end goal is to help more people with blindness be more independent. We spent a lot of time on it, and it's really satisfying to see it work," shares Ethan. "Another thing we really like about it is its simplicity, because it doesn't require a lot of maintenance, which means that you don't have to have a lot of technical knowledge to use it and keep it maintained." Braille Institute, 1-800-BRAILLE, otherwise known as 272-4553. Braille Institute of America, Incorporated, 741 North Vermont Avenue, Los Angeles, California, 90029. From blog.wheeltheworld.com, How Wheel the World is Transforming Accessible Accommodations Through Tech-Powered Solutions. Posted by Andres Villagran, that's V-I-L-L-A-G-R-A-N, on August 11th. Before we start, let's imagine the following scenario. John and Lucy are planning their honeymoon in Cancun. Lucy is a power wheelchair user, so they are planning their trip so it can meet her accessibility needs. John is a seriously skilled travel planner and knows Lucy's needs by heart. He starts researching all-inclusive resorts and wants to find out how inclusive their amenities are for people with disabilities. He already knows from first-hand experience that there is a huge gap in the travel industry regarding accessibility. Still, this issue has made him find a way to work around the lack of information. He thoroughly researches his favorite bloggers and accessible travel communities online. There's a hot link for a list of those. He scours through different marketplaces and resorts websites to find any highlighted accessibility features. But since they have had bad experiences in the past, this is not enough. He calls the resort directly and speaks to a manager about the accessible room, specifically if it has grab bars by the toilet and a roll-in shower with no thresholds. One of the selected resorts indicated that the king room with a garden view is accessible and includes the amenities Lucy needs. After a long flight, Lucy and John arrive at the resort late in the evening and are looking forward to a good night's sleep. Once they check in, John and Lucy confirm the resort gave them the correct room. The bathroom has a roll-in shower and grab bars by the toilet. However, when Lucy wanted to check out the room they paid for, her power wheelchair was too wide to enter the restroom. The couple rushes to the lobby and asks to switch rooms. The hotelier apologizes and tells them that unfortunately all rooms have the same restroom door frame. The newlyweds kept their reservation, but John had to help Lucy transfer to the toilet and shower whenever needed. Despite this issue, they enjoyed their honeymoon. But why are there accessibility flaws in the first place? Why do wheelchair users have to be so cautious and scared of accessible accommodations not being accessible? Why can't people with accessibility needs and their companions have a worry-free travel experience? The blog post will explain how we are trying to find a solution to these imaginary yet relatable experiences through technology at Wheel the World. So, what are the problems Wheel the World is trying to solve, and how we are solving them? Number one, accessibility information is basic and unreliable. First comes the fact that hotels merely label the rooms as accessible without providing comprehensive descriptions regarding the reasons for their accessibility, to whom it is accessible, and the specific accessibility features available. This simplistic approach fails to grasp the multifaceted nature of accessibility. We believe that accessibility is more nuanced than that and encompasses far more intricacies than are commonly perceived. WTW Solution. As a technology company focused on creating a reliable accommodation marketplace for travelers with disabilities, our goal is to provide comprehensive accessibility information that enables people with accessibility needs to book hotels at the hot link easily and confidently through technology. Our approach centers on presenting factual information, incorporating key accessibility data points when describing rooms and hotels, and enabling individuals to make informed choices based on their needs and preferences. Number two, accessibility needs differ for each person. Current solutions don't take into consideration that disabilities are highly individualized, and accessibility needs are particular from person to person. For example, a lowered bed can be useful to wheelchair users, but not to semi-ambulatory persons with reduced mobility, such as crutches users. In the same way, a person with low vision may benefit from large print amenities, but a legally blind person will not. WTW Solution. We list accessible accommodations and show why they may or may not be accessible to a specific individual. With 200-plus data points, such as the door frame's width, the bed's height, the shower type, and if toilets have grab bars, we showcase the room's features for the user to check them out and decide which one works best for them. After all, each individual knows best what they need, so what better way than leaving that decision to them? Number three, current solutions don't guarantee accessibility information. The third issue lies in that current solutions are not guaranteed accessibility information. More often than not, when people with disabilities find their way to booking an accessible room, upon arrival, they get a different room than expected, or the room does not have the accessibility features they need. WTW solution? To guarantee all the accessibility data we provide in our listed accommodations, we developed the AMS, Accessibility Mapping System, and created our Mappers program. The AMS is an internal app we built to collect accessibility data about hotels and their accessible rooms. The Mappers program trains people to become accessibility mappers who collect accessibility data and pictures on site at different hotels, then organize the information collected into a listing so our users can easily identify the accessibility data point they are interested in. We also offer personalized support from our highly trained travel experts, Hotlink. When you book a hotel through our website, a travel expert will call the hotel for you and confirm the correct room, making sure the accessibility standards are met perfectly. Furthermore, a travel expert will be available throughout your stay if any problems arise. We want to allow our users to choose and guarantee them the room they selected. We are committed to ensuring that individuals with disabilities can find suitable accommodations without hindrance, making their travel experience as seamless and worry-free as possible. From FightingBlindness.org, to cane or not to cane, article by Jenny, J-E-N-N-I, Evans, E-V-A-N-S, M-A-C-F-R-M, development manager at the Julian Center. I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, RP, about 12 years ago. At the time, I sought support through my state's vocational rehabilitation program, which offered assistive technology, orientation and mobility training, and white cane instruction. I was still able to drive without any issues, at least according to the BMV. So I decided that while those resources could help me, I was too proud and vain to use them. I was in my early 30s and thought, if I still have my license, then I don't really need those tools. I wanted to avoid any stigma. Fast forward to 2025. After countless falls, broken teeth, bruised arms, and the BMV revoking my night driving privileges last summer, I decided to fully embrace my reality. I've always been open about my RP, but now I'm relearning how to use the white cane. I still drive to and from work during the day, though I'm not sure how long that will last. When I walk around the neighborhood with my cane, I still worry about stigma and how people perceive me, especially when they see me get into my car afterward without any apparent issues. I've had to remind myself that the cane is a tool to keep me safe. When I drive, I rely on extra mirrors and cameras, and the car provides a physical barrier. When I walk, it's just me, no barrier, and I can move in any direction. I'm learning to humble myself and take full advantage of my white cane training. Ultimately, it's nobody's business why I use it, and if someone does scoff or judge, they'll probably be in my blind spots, so I'll never know. Also from FightingBlindness.org, in their Beacon Stories, Real Hope, Real Progress. Lindsay Rambo, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y-R-A-M-B-O, has always kept her focus forward, whether she's logging miles as a long-distance runner, raising her two energetic sons in Winchester, Virginia, or teaching special education in Loudoun County Public Schools. But perhaps her greatest act of endurance has been her decades-long journey with vision loss, and the moment when years of uncertainty gave way to something powerful, the promise of progress. Diagnosed with an unspecified disease of the retina as an infant, Lindsay's early life was filled with uncertainty. "I wore glasses, started at 10 weeks old," recalls Lindsay, "but no one really had answers." Determined not to let her vision define her, Lindsay threw herself into sports like soccer, basketball, and running. In school, she used magnifiers and enlarged print to keep pace, all while doing her best to hide her vision loss from her peers. "I avoided anything that would draw extra attention to myself," says Lindsay. "It took me a long time to come to terms and stop trying to be like everyone else." At 16, Lindsay received a diagnosis of cone rod dystrophy, along with a prognosis that she could experience complete blindness by her early 20s. It was overwhelming and discouraging enough that she stepped away from the eye specialists for several years. It wasn't until her late 20s that she re-engaged with the medical community, eventually receiving a new diagnosis in 2013 of retinitis pigmentosa. That visit in Philadelphia was the first time she left an eye appointment with something that she hadn't felt before, hope. The retina specialist told me, "Within the next 5 to 10 years, you'll be a prime candidate for a treatment." I had never heard anything hopeful like that before, Lindsay recalls. And then at 28 years old, I finally received a correct diagnosis after genetic testing at the National Eye Institute of LCA5. That spark of hope became a turning point. In 2022, Lindsay's husband, Zach, researched clinicaltrials.gov and discovered the Opus Genetics gene therapy trial for LCA5, Leber congenital amaurosis caused by mutations in the LCA5 gene. The listing felt like fate, and almost 10 years after her last visit to that same retina specialist in Philadelphia, Lindsay reached out right away. And in September 2023, Lindsay became the first participant to sign consent for the trial. She received gene therapy in her left eye, the eye that had always been weaker. The process is demanding. It's mentally and physically exhausting, says Lindsay. The travel, the long days of testing, the follow-ups. But I don't take it for granted for a second. I feel very fortunate to have been selected. Lindsay and her family live over 3 hours from Philadelphia, and she'll remain part of the study for 5 years. But just weeks after surgery, she started noticing a difference. "About a month after surgery, I looked out the window and saw my kids playing in the yard," recalls Lindsay. "I'd never been able to do that before. It was just a little moment, but for me, it was everything." Those early observations were confirmed through testing. Lindsay's left eye, once her weakest, has now become her strongest. Her central vision has improved, and she's been able to reduce the text size on her iPhone and iPad for the first time. And her performance on the virtual reality orientation and mobility obstacle course has improved with each visit. "It's surreal," says Lindsay. "I still haven't fully processed the fact that this is happening to me." That moment was seeded years earlier when Lindsay attended her first Baltimore Vision Walk in 2014. "It was the first time I felt hopeful, not just for myself, but for everyone living with vision loss," says Lindsay. "I didn't know if I'd ever benefit from a treatment, but I wanted to be part of the community working toward it." Today, Lindsay continues to give back through her podcast, Chasing the Light, where she documents her clinical trial journey and everyday life with blindness, and through advocacy work with the Foundation Fighting Blindness. In 2024, she shared her story on a National Foundation webinar about clinical trials, which led to a powerful connection with another woman diagnosed with LCA5. The two now speak regularly and consider each other soul sisters. Lindsay has also written 2 books, Joyfully and Faithfully, and Joyfully and Faithfully Fit, The Extra Mile, and uses fitness as a tool to care for both her body and spirit. "I can't hop in a car and drive, but I can put on headphones and go for a run," says Lindsay. "That gives me a sense of freedom." Each chapter of Lindsay's journey has added strength, clarity, and purpose to her path. Not being able to drive, especially as a teen, was a deep source of frustration. "It was the first time my motivation couldn't overcome something," says Lindsay. But with Zach's unwavering support, he even loves to drive, she's learned to embrace interdependence and focus on what she can do. Embracing support and focusing on what's within her control has shaped Lindsay's perspective, and it's something she hopes others with vision loss can hold on to, too. "Find what fuels you and pour your energy into it," says Lindsay. "There are so many resources and communities out there. No one should have to navigate any type of vision loss alone." Lindsay hopes to receive treatment in her right eye within the next year and a half. As clinical trials like this continue to advance, Lindsay envisions a future where generations to come won't have to face the same uncertainties she once did. "I just want it to be easier for the next generation," says Lindsay. "I want them to grow up with treatments and cures. That's what drives me. For so long, I believed research would help someone else, but not me. Now I'm living it." From today.ucsd.edu. Engineers take a closer look at how a plant virus primes the immune system to fight cancer. Posted July 25th. A virus that typically infects black-eyed peas is showing great promise as a low-cost, potent cancer immunotherapy, and researchers are uncovering why. In a study published in Cell Biomaterials, a team led by chemical and nanoengineers at the University of California, San Diego, took a closer look at how the cowpea mosaic virus, CPMV, unlike other plant viruses, is uniquely effective at activating the body's immune system to recognize and attack cancer cells. In preclinical studies, CPMV has demonstrated potent anti-tumor effects in multiple mouse models, as well as in canine cancer patients. When injected directly into tumors, CPMV therapy recruits innate immune cells, such as neutrophils, macrophages, and natural killer cells, into the tumor microenvironment to destroy cancer cells. Meanwhile, it activates B cells and T cells to establish systemic, long-lasting anti-tumor memory. This immune reawakening not only helps clear the targeted tumor, but also primes the immune system to hunt down metastatic tumors elsewhere in the body. It is fascinating that the CPMV, but not other plant viruses, stimulates an anti-tumor response, said Nicole Steinmetz, the Leo Entrude Szilard Chancellor's Endowed Chair in the Aiso Yufeng Li Family Department of Chemical and Nanoengineering at the UC San Diego Jacobs School of Engineering and the study's corresponding author. Boy, that's got a lot of words to spell. Okay, her name is spelled Steinmetz, the Leo Entrude Szilard, that's Szilard, Chancellor's Endowed Chair in Aiso Yufeng Li, that's Aiso Yufeng Li, Family Department of Chemical and Engineering. Okay, that seems to take care of that. This work gives us insight into how CPMV works so well, said study first author Anthony Omole, O-M-O-L-E, a chemical and nanoengineering PhD student in Steinmetz's lab. What we found most exciting is that although human immune cells are not infected by CPMV, they respond to it and are reprogrammed toward an activated state, which ultimately trains them to detect and eradicate cancerous cells. A key question in translating CPMV to human cancer patients has been, what makes this plant virus so effective at fighting cancer? To investigate, Omole, Steinmetz and colleagues at the National Cancer Institute's Nanotechnology Characterization Laboratory performed a side-by-side comparison of CPMV with the cowpea chlorotic mottle virus, CCMV, a closely related plant virus that does not exhibit anti-tumor effects when administered intratumorally. Both viruses form similarly sized nanoparticles and are taken up by human immune cells at similar rates. Yet once inside, the viruses produce different outcomes. CPMV, the team found, stimulates a type 1, 2, and 3 interferons, proteins with well-known anti-cancer properties. This is particularly interesting because some of the earliest cancer immunotherapy drugs were recombinant interferons, noted Omole. Meanwhile, CCMV stimulates a set of pro-inflammatory interleukins that do not translate to effective tumor clearance. Another difference lies in how these viruses' RNAs are processed within mammalian cells. CPMV RNAs persist longer and get delivered to the endolysosome, E-N-D-O-L-Y-S-O-S-O-M-E, where they activate toll-like receptor 7, and that is amazing. Okay, too much spelling. I ran out of time for this week's Vision News. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138.